Dr. F. A. C. Olas, Real 2.
As members of the Medical Auxiliary Service, we were allocated duties, and there were night duties to perform. And whilst on night duties, we had to stay at the dental clinic all night long, which meant that some of us had to be awake all night long, up on the rooftops, on a watch out, whilst others slept. And so this was like, say, a two-hour shift. And we just had to watch for any air raids and see which directions the bombers were going to, and if there was any likelihood of their coming towards us, we would then be prepared for necessary action. And but I can't remember anything exciting that really took place whilst we were on duty there.
Was the hospital bombed during this time?
Not that I can recall. Nearby, yes, but not the hospital itself.
During this period, do you know what was the conditions in Singapore like? Were there many people trying to evacuate from the country, or any people coming from upcountry?
Oh, yes, indeed. There were attempts by so many people to get out of Singapore. So many, of course, the Europeans were given first priority to get out, women and children first, and they would go to the harbor hoping to catch a ship. There were also many locals who wanted to run. Women and children and men, unfortunately. People wanted to get away. We realized that food may be a big problem. So all of us spent whatever money we could have to purchase canned food of all descriptions, milk, fish, salmon, sardines, beef, sausages, powdered milk, all kinds of canned food, sugar, and so on. There was a hoarding. There was hoarding, definitely. Rice and everything else being hoarded. Doctors, of course, were trying to collect as much medicine as they could for their practices. My father-in-law certainly did, I don't know. And all these efforts were made towards trying to survive in case the Japanese came in case foodstuffs were cut off.
Were the conditions chaotic? Did people rush for these things? Or did they buy it?
I think they just went bought and hoarded it. Mm. And then, of course, when these things started getting bought up, and the shops were devoid of them, and there were no more shipments coming in, the black markets appeared. You could still buy them, but at a price.
That was before the Japanese...
Even before the Japanese occupation, as I can recall.
What about any looting going on at that time?
No. Looting, you only heard of reports of looting of bombed out buildings. The odd sporadic report, that's all. But things were not very pleasant during that period of time. Things were very uncertain. And especially as we kept on reading the newspapers of the progress of the Japanese army south towards Singapore, Of course, there were all kinds of promises, rumors that some British troops were on their way to assist those already present. But as the Japanese advanced, you've got the withdrawals of the Allied forces from the Malaya into Singapore. And of course, there was a large influx of them when the day the causeway was blown up. And I think that's the day I got married. Personally, on a personal note, I very much feared that the Japanese would get into Singapore, and I feared that all this talk about replenishments of coming in, that they would never get into Singapore, was not going to materialize. And the life after that was very questionable. I mean, you know, we saw death all around, and we wondered whether we would survive. There was always optimism, because when you're young, you're optimistic, but there is that question. What of the future? And of course, at that time I was young. I had this girlfriend. I was very much in love with her. We were very much in love with each other. And when things were looking very black, we decided let's get married. She didn't want to leave Singapore, so I had to. Being under 21, I was in 20. I had to cycle all the way from the General Hospital to my parents' house in the 7th mile up Serangoon Road. A long ride. And my father was a person who was a very stern man. And I can admit that I was frightened of my father. I could never count him as a friend, you know. I was always frightened of my father, but not my mother. My mother was very sweet. And I recall that when I reached the house, he was in the garden, and he says, "Jock," my Christian name, they call me Jock as a pet name. What are you doing? So I said, "Papa," I said, "I've come here to ask your permission to get married." They knew that I was going steady with Asila, my girlfriend, you see. He says, "Oh." I said, "Well, you know that the conditions are not very good, and we don't know. The Japanese will come into Singapore, and I don't know what's going to happen to us." He says, "Well, it's okay with me," which I was surprised to hear. "Speak to Mum." So I went up to my mother. I said, "Mum, I said, you know, I've come to ask permission from you and Papa to get married." She says, "You're not even 21. How can you get married?" I said, "Mum, you know, the Japanese are coming in. We don't know what's going to happen after the Japanese come in. We don't know what the future holds for us." And she said the funniest thing that I'll never forget this. She says, "But you're not even 21. I said, "But Mum, we don't know what's going to happen. The Japanese are coming." He says, "But if you get married before you're 21, what will the Japanese think?" She was a very simple, very sweet person. And she says, "All right, well, look, I can't say yes. Better speak to my brother, Gino." He was Sir George Orr subsequently. So I spoke to him, and he said, "Of course you must get married." So within a week we were married. We got special permission, we got married. And that was a time when I got leave from the MAS, and I went to stay in Lincoln Road in next to my father-in-law. That was a semi-detached house. It is a semi-detached house. The one side occupied by father-in-law and his present wife, and the other side occupied by a couple called Mr. and Mrs. Mitchell. He had been recruited and he was fighting, and she, with her child, evacuated. So the house was empty. So we stayed there with my mother-in-law and sister, and we went to, directly from my wedding, we went to stay there. Whilst we were there, along Lincoln Road, which is not far from Newton, we could see the bombers coming over. And of course, we had the safety, relative safety of my father-in-law's shelter. Now, meanwhile, we had bought a lot of provisions, stocked up, you know, and he was very cautious. He made us do it also, you see. And I remember seeing these bombers fly over and the flak all over, but we hardly ever saw any of the RAF fighter planes. And if we did hear them, they had a peculiar noise, and before long we hear them diving down to earth, having been shot down. There's no resistance, matter to talk of. But bombing is all right. If you know the direction at which the planes are coming, are going, you can anticipate where the bombs, the line along which the bombs are likely to fall. So if the planes are coming towards you, you duck. If the planes are going elsewhere, you could watch them, but you should also duck, because the anti-aircraft shells, the anti-aircraft flak, could drop anywhere. In fact, they were falling over, and I think that must have caused some injuries, those people who were watching. The worst part was when shelling started. Shells are terrible. Shells, you can hear a whine and the explosion, and there's no saying where that shell's going to. You hear the whine, and if the whine disappears, you know it's going to burst somewhere. But if you hear the whine and it goes over you, you know it's going to burst somewhere beyond you. And sometimes it just bursts without even any warning at all. And in fact, our house was shelled. Now, in the neighborhood, along Lincoln Road, there's a whole row of semi-detached houses. I remember one house which was shelled, and the people came running, and my father-in-law and I went running towards this place for help. They came running for help, you see, medical advice. And there was a lady who had been hit and her leg had been badly injured, and she had eventually had to have it amputated. She was the mother of later on a very well-known state cricketer, Carl Schubert. Anyway, so the days went by, you know. I stayed home. My father-in-law, of course, had to go along to give, see his patients, work. We would go out trying to buy more and more canned food, stock up. Details, you know, these things sort of lost in my mind. Then we got to more and more of these Australian, young Australian soldiers, Indian soldiers, were stationed, billeted all around us. Young, inexperienced boys seemed lost. I remember those people. And then one morning when we woke up, we found that everybody along Lincoln Road had left and gone somewhere. They vacated. I think at that time they were fighting along Bukit Timah. And we thought, no, we'd better not stay ourselves. So we all piled into my father-in-law's car, and including two of his dogs, and started a drive to the General Hospital. And besides that, my leave was over, and I had to report for duty. Of course, I should have gone in for duty before then, but of course, and you know, the situation being such, my wife refused to let me go. And anyway, I felt that I was duty bound to go back on duty. And so we took this very hazardous drive, very hazardous. After we had gone about a few hundred yards, we could hear the drone of one of these low-flying Japanese fighters. They were going over treetops and strafing, shooting, machine gunning. And we'd hear one and stop the car and go to a ditch and hide until it disappeared, then go on again until we heard it again and do the same thing. And so we drove all the way to the General Hospital. We could see these helpless troops on the side of the road. We could see bodies, dead bodies on the side of the road, nobody to take them away, rotting, stench. And eventually we reached the King Edward VII College of Medicine. When we got there, we found there were quite a number of people who had gone there to take refuge. And of course, there were no rooms or anything. We just had to lie on the floor and wait. In fact, when I got there, I was so sad to hear that a number of my colleagues had been killed. One student, his name was Baptist, had been killed by shell at Tan Tock Seng Hospital. And they carried his body, a group of my friends and colleagues, from Tan Tock Seng Hospital to the King Edward VII College. I don't know why they did this, to carry his body all the way there, to bury him in the fields there, which was once a golf course. And whilst they were burying, a plane flew over, and then it disappeared. Then it flew over again and started dropping bombs and or machine gunning, and so many of my friends were killed there and then and injured. And I remember being so sad when I heard about this, and I might have been there if I was there. It was only there, I think, a night or so, that's all. And before we had heard rumors of the surrender. And Dr. Allen, who was then the dean of the medical school, called us together and addressed us. And he told us that Singapore had fallen, the Japanese had come in, and that we were now on our own. Of course, we were at a loss as to what to do, but of course, whilst we were there, we did have, were provided with some kind of common food. Food had been cooked, and we had rations. Then we had to go home, all very apprehensive because the Japanese troops had made their appearance. And what were we to do?
Doctor, just before we go into that, could you tell us who were the people who were seeking refuge at the hospital?
Doctors and their families, students and their families, some of them, their staff of the teaching school.
Were there any local people there who were not anyway
connected? Not connected? I don't think so. No, I can't remember any. But if there were, they wouldn't have been turned out. I don't think so.
And when did Dr. Allen tell the group about the news of the surrender?
The day that Singapore fell, in the late morning or afternoon, I can't remember.
So after that, did all of you have to go back to your places, or only those who have their own homes?
I don't think any of us were compelled to go. But we had to face realities. There sooner or later we'd have to go home. So we decided the sooner we went, the better. And what were we to do, you see? And we were very apprehensive. You see, particularly since, although we are Eurasians, my wife is very fair. Her sister is very fair. Her mother is very fair. And in fact, her mother is almost pure Dutch. And they could all have been taken as British, you know, and goodness knows what the Japanese would have done. And we had, you asked me a question just now. Yes, I could recall that Miss Ivy Tay and Gordon Scott. They accompanied us home. How we went home, what vehicles we used, I cannot recall. It all didn't pile into my father-in-law's car, but somehow we got home. We could see these Japanese in the khaki-clad uniforms, putties, short chaps with their hats and the shades behind their necks. All over, but we were very frightened, but I don't think we were at all stopped and questioned. If we were, I would have remembered. Maybe I was too frightened to remember.
When did you leave the hospital? Immediately after the news?
I think a day or two later.
By that time, did any of the Japanese soldiers go to the hospital?
Oh yes. We could see them driving in.
So by that time,
and I think that they are the ones who ordered us out.
All of you.
Yes.
Do you remember what was your impression of these soldiers?
My impression of these soldiers, they were frightening. You know, they were, to us, of course, enemies, you know. And they had built themselves a reputation of being vicious fighters and also cruel people, wouldn't stop at anything. And we were very apprehensive of them, to start off with. And, of course, we shuddered every time we saw them. I mean, you know, we thought that, my goodness, they wouldn't think twice before sticking a bayonet into any one of us.
Where did all of you get these impressions?
Well, this is sort of an impression that one naturally forms when, you know, during a situation like that, and you hear the ruthless fighting. I mean, people are at war, they're killing each other, so what's one more life? And we, after all, were in Singapore. We were Singaporeans. We were supposed to have been enemies of the Japanese, and they could have done the same thing to us. And well, anyway, we were frightened. This is the feeling that personally I had, and my wife had, and the people I knew had. And when we eventually got home, we were very much afraid that these Japanese soldiers would come along and molest the women folk. This is what we were very apprehensive of. We got in and, of course, locked all the doors. And at night, we just didn't be afraid to put on the lights. You asked about if there was any electricity. I think at times there were, at times there were not. We were using a lot of kerosene lamps, oil lamps. When we got, we to our horror, we found that the Japanese had been billeted all around us and around the places in Newton, some big houses in Newton. And we could hear them walking around and talking to each other as they walked around and around us. We were all petrified, kept very, very still when they came by. But none of them ever did raise a hand. They were crude people. There, for example, there would be a standpipe down the road, and there would be the Japanese soldiers having a bath, stark naked. Then, you know, that sort of we were not used to that kind of attitude, personalities. And there was only one chap, we called him Slippery Sam. He seemed to be a bit a man that we sensed was out for mischief, you know. But luckily, one of the officers in charge of the troops in the neighborhood came by, and he turned out to be a very friendly person. And we told him, he spoke a little English, and we told him of our fears, and he guaranteed us that his troops would not harm us. So we were quite relieved at that. We had to, of course, decide what to do with ourselves during the days. We couldn't just hide. My father-in-law, as a doctor, had to go back and see his patients again, you see. I mean, that was his work. And what was I to do? ? The school had closed. And I had to find some way of living and supporting my wife. there were times when there were happenings which frightened us. For example, a whole lot of them would come by in a van, these soldiers, Japanese, and